According to the Patanjali Yoga Sutra, concentration is paramount. This, of course, is in perfect unison with what the Buddha says. Buddhism arose out of Hinduism, so it is, again, perfect distillation of the Vedas and all the saints. Say, even with anyone in the bhakti cult or the jnana cult, if you want to say they're two, which in fact they're really not, it's concentration and awareness of an illumination in that path that you're following toward, you know, realization and experience of God. So in Patanjali Yoga Sutras, he says, the concentration of the true spiritual aspirant is attained through faith, energy, recollectedness, absorption, and illumination, and may also be attained through surrender to God. So if we're going to follow yoga or Buddhism or early Christianity or frankly even the early Toradic texts, we're moving from one level to the next level of perfection, and perfection in understanding and revelation, and finally toward illumination. So we begin with faith. This is why Sri Ramana Maharshi said, faith is the cause of self-realization, which is really interesting because, you know, being a jnani, people would think that you don't have to have faith in really anything. But actually, in the Viveka Chudamani by Adi Shankaracharya, which Bhagavan translated himself while he was in Virupaksha Cave, Bhagavan used this translation and he put this in. He said, faith, which is the cause of self-realization, is the outcome of firm conviction of the truth of the Vedantic scriptures and of the words of the Guru. Okay, so we have to have a clear understanding of what he's talking about. So later on, you can see in other texts of Ramana Maharshi, it said this, that all religion is based on faith and aims at deepening that faith. Okay? Now still understand, we're at the first stage toward the illumination of God within the heart of our own being. And so all religion is based on this first step, which is faith. And this aims at deepening that faith, at enabling its light to shine at full strength. So here's the first step that, you know, that we need to understand. Just the acquisition, say, I believe in God, or I have faith in a teacher, or I have faith in the scriptures, or I have faith in my own meditation and my own sadhana. What is the aim is to deepen it and enable the light of that faith to shine at full strength. So right away you can see that the yamas and niyamas, or those things which even Patanjali spoke about very, very plainly, the things we do and the things we don't do in our life are paramount, because to deepen the faith and have it come to full strength, we need to increase what we should be doing and decrease what we should not be doing. And here is the danger that we've spoken about before of people that get into a frame of reference with religion, more in the Advaitic sense, where they say, I am that, and there's nothing left to do. Even if they have the light of that understanding, there is no incentive to deepen it and to bring it to full strength. And so, okay, then if we look at the life of Sri Ramana Maharshi, what did he do? He had that experience. Then he had this great devotion to Arunachala. And then he wrote the hymns to Arunachala saying, save me, lest I'm lost. And then he would weep and cry profusely at the recalling and himself reading the lives of the saints. And then he built the temple to the goddess. And he made sure that his ashram that came up, not his, well, you say his ashram, but the ashram that's named after him, he made sure that there was opportunity by example of so many different modes of spiritual practice and sadhana, the temples, the worship, the meditation, the production of Arunachala, all these things had the purpose of bringing to full strength the light of this faith. Okay? So faith is the beginning. But it then Patanjali goes on further to say this. After strength, after faith comes energy. Okay? So if we wanted to just physiologically look at what is necessary in terms of energy on the physical plane and then energy on the higher planes, now what we do and what we don't do, it seems even more important. More efficacious to increasing our energy if it's a virtue which we're, or a good habit, and more detrimental and harmful if it's a bad habit that we do not deal with and try to eliminate in our life. On the very lowest level, but still of extreme importance, are the eating habits, the sleeping habits, the habits of cleanliness, and of course, association. Of course, association kind of leads into that higher level because you do things with the mind when you're engaging and talking with other people that drain your energy or increase it. This is why they say, yes, satsang is of supreme importance because we're keeping communion with those who you consider holy or spiritual. Whereas opposed to if you're keeping company with those who are not, it's a draining of energy. And of course, you know, we look at our own character, anger, greed, lust, avarice, lying, all of these things, they consume energy. And this is why Patanjali talks about it, as we need to be on constant guard to avoid these things. Okay, the next one is recollectedness. Now, some people might say, well, recollectedness of what? Through grace, and all of this is through grace, because like Patanjali says, this supreme concentration can be attained through surrender to God. When you surrender to God in a proper sense, which is true, like giving yourself and not expecting anything in return, loving anything or anyone, especially God, without the desire to be loved in return, which is not easy. Who loves and does not want to be loved in return? You know, even the saints cry out for some response from God. Even Jesus on the cross said, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, O Lord, why hast thou forsaken me? He said, the heart yearns for some response. So in the beginning, when we have true faith, God comes to us and gives us this feeling, which, you know, many coming away from pilgrimages to India or different Christian shrines or Jerusalem, they feel this kind of like presence of God. So now Patanjali is saying we need to have recollectedness of that. Recollectedness of this pristine state where God was overwhelming in our consciousness. And when that presence of God comes, at that point, we are really in a position of surrender because we don't feel we exist to that extent. We just, God is just all pervasive. Any questions? Okay. Now, after recollectness comes absorption. Okay. So the idea is you recollect through prayer. First of all, you've got your faith, your energy, your recollectness, then absorption, and finally illumination. So we need to become absorbed in that state. Here is where prayer becomes essential. Because, like they say, all that happens to us, which is in spiritual movement, is the effect of grace. But Sri Ramana Maharshi says, grace is always there. Our job is to become receptive to it. So we need to become absorbed in that receptive state. This is why meditation is the key. Because when we're in the depths of meditation, we become absorbed in that very, very pristine and consciously aware state of concentration. Because in this absorbed state, it does not mean that we're, in a sense, blissed out with the presence of God. Again, we're talking about the virtue of concentration and awareness. So we're absorbed in this supremely concentrated state, and now we're also aware of the defects in our mind. Okay? We're absorbed in a state of concentration and acute awareness. So we can feel the presence of God. We can possibly even see the presence of God. But we also see that which is not godly in us. And that is the illumination. That is the final illumination. To like understand, as spiritually advanced as we feel we can be, the battle of Kurukshetra, the Bhagavad Gita, is raging in us. There is never a point until the final end when it is gone. This is why Sri Ramana Maharshi said, O Arunachala, unless thou extendest thy hand of grace and save me, I am lost. He said that. He said that later on in the latter part of his life. So this is the illumination. And now this is, this sheds light on that very, in a sense, perplexing, but divine command of Jesus to Saint Siloam, the great Athenite monk, where Jesus said, keep your mind in hell, but do not despair. The illumination of the vulnerability that we possess of falling away from God, that should incite us to deeper prayer, deeper surrender, deeper, in a sense, a spiritual anxiety, which is based on faith. And that is when that happens, when we have that determination of reliance on God, then faith comes to its full strength. And that's the purpose of religion. It's not illumination of self-realization. And now we can see where great beings like Sri Ramakrishna would say, Oh Mother, don't give me liberation. Let me love you deeper and deeper. And then, of course, he said later on, I don't want to become sugar. I want to continue to taste sugar. Because when the heart and mind gets in this spiritual state where you're ready to do anything because you feel you need deeper and more and more and more grace from God, then you become like a lighthouse. And in your efforts to save yourself, then you'll save thousands around you. And this is, again, the purpose of life, you know, to love God and His creation and to be, when you say a saint gave everything. So there it is. There it is. That's the final illumination that we're looking for. And so we should be on guard not to say, everything seems to be now in order. And I really feel balanced because it's not safe. This is why we find in the Bhagavad Gita, Sri Krishna is saying that the path which he finds most enthralling, actually one of the Sanskrit words that's put into English that Sri Krishna uses when he's describing a devotee who has love for him, Sri Krishna says to him, to God, it's enthralling. And so this is what we want. We want God to, in a sense, be enthralled with us. Because then when we move through life facing difficulties, if God is enthralled with us, He's going to infuse into us the ability to overcome hardship and to overcome the difficulties. If that is not there, even if it's a type of love where we feel, I am that, and it's all purity, it's not enthralling according to God. It's pleasing, no doubt, for sure. No, don't try to. Let me give you the opinion. I'm underestimating the power of like knowledge. But again, all of those that I've known in India, even from Anandamayi Ma and all the great saints that were around her, and then those who I've been blessed with to know who lived with Sri Ramana Maharshi, who quote-unquote blossomed fully in jnana. This is like what KVS told me at the ashram. Many around Sri Ramana Maharshi flowered completely in jnana, or knowledge, or this Advaita experience. But what strikes us most about them is their love for God and Bhagavan, and their love for Arunacha, their love for the Divine Mother. The knowledge blossomed into this, well, the faith at its full strength is unselfish, pure, unselfish love of God. Yes. So this is the path. This is why, of course, Ramana Maharshi said, suffering is the way to self-realization, because when we suffer, but we know that there is a Divine Mother and a Divine Father, if we want to say there is this difference, that they're ready to uplift us if we ask. And so this is why suffering and hardship is there. We ask to be uplifted, but then the upliftment and the blessing, this is why Patanjali talks about concentration and awareness being the pinnacle and being really the crown jewel of the spiritual seeker, or the spiritual sadhaka, one who's performing spiritual practice. Is this grace and this upliftment in its highest and most profound and powerful sense is very subtle. So we have to have this acute awareness to catch it. We can feel this embrace of God, but it is a subtle, what did it say in the Bible? A still small voice. And so we, in the depths of our, you know, deep in our mind, we can feel this, and we can have a feeling of assurance. And so this is the important thing about, again, the purpose of meditation is to increase concentration and to increase our receptivity for that grace which is always blowing. This is why Sri Ramakrishna said, grace is blowing in the wind. Our job is to unfurl our sail and catch it. And sometimes, yes, the wind blows with gale force and we hardly even have to pull the sail out and it's pushing us along. But if we look at the lives of the saints and we look at the lives of the masters who have gone before us and have fought the good fight and succeeded, usually the wind of grace was just a mild breeze and they had to constantly keep their hand on the rudder and one hand on the sail, keeping it tight, because with a little bit of distraction, all of a sudden, everything seems dark. So, thanks be to God, we don't live in a perfect world. Om, yes. As you move through spiritual life, then you have to really start to understand what the saints say and what the Baal Shem Tov said, the great light of Israel. Jesus said the same thing. The Buddha said the same thing. The Toradic masters said the same thing. All the rishis and saints of Hinduism said the same thing. That there is a spiritual significance to everything that happens in our life. There is nothing that is trite and mundane. So there, and as we move on in spiritual practice and get more developed and get deeper and start to accomplish spiritual heights, then it even becomes much more significant and profoundly important that every aspect of our life is, we remove negligence from it. That we take a bath properly, that we eat properly, that we, what we deal with in terms of computers or books or anything, we do it properly. Because everything is habitual. And if there is any aspect of our lives that are compulsively and habitually lazy, negligent, sloppy, it all reflects back into our spiritual practice. This is why the saints say there is no line of demarcation between the spiritual life and the quote-unquote material life, because everything is spiritually significant. So when a person says, I can't, I won't, or I'm just not capable, that means that it's a possibility to, if you overcome something on the basic material plane that you feel that is just something beyond you, but you work at it and you bring it to a level of perfection, in a mirrored sense, that brings to perfection something on the higher plane, on the higher mind, which enables you to even move higher and higher and higher and deeper. People, when they spoke about Sri Ramana Maharshi, the one thing that they would say, and they said the same thing about Anandamayi Ma, and I know many saints that this was said about, one of the first things that they speak about when they try to describe them is not, oh, they were a spiritual dynamo and they had such shakti and bliss. It was, to the most minute aspect, their life was a manifestation of perfection. Everything they did was perfect. Sri Ramana Maharshi is a great example. When he would come and sit down with the ladies and stitch leaf plates, which they would eat on, and these ladies, they were like professionals. They had been doing it since they were 2 years old and trained by their grandmothers and mothers. They used to have contests, and they could do it quickly and to perfection. And he would sit down, and they would be astounded. He did it much faster than all of them, to a much more refined degree of perfection, and he did it on every aspect of his life. So those who follow him, it's really like, the great book, The Imitation of Christ. Even the word Christian, a Christian means, in the early centuries, it meant little Christ. So you try to imitate that. And so if you find any aspect in your life that is imperfect, well, that's the thing you pay the most attention to, because you realize, even if it's on the very gross, most mundane level, because if you bring it to a level of perfection, it has a complementary effect on the higher mind and the higher endeavors of life. And this is why sadhana is imperative. This is why satsang is imperative, because you keep company with those who are doing sadhana, and everything becomes spiritually advantageous for the purpose of illuminating that which is trouble to us. So it's the exact opposite of what I've heard recently said on the internet by some very Advaitic and very popular tall talker. He said, well, I want to challenge you with the idea that there's nothing to do on any level. You don't have to do anything about anything. He said, yes, you can make a cup of tea because that gives you no trouble, but you don't need to do anything about anything else. You are that. And of course, on the very highest Advaitic sense, at the very highest level of accomplishment, that's true. But the very ones that these people are following in the shadow of, they didn't follow that path. They followed the path of endeavor and completion and then perfection. So therefore, we should pray to God, is we should never get to the point we're feeling complacent in life. It's a great danger. Why is it easy to get along in life in the face of adversity, in the face of hardship? Because if Patanjali is right, which we can pretty much use him as a very authoritative, profound truth, faith is the key. So if we're moving with people of different paths and even different religions, if you can see the act of faith inside of them, that is the highest virtue and the highest grace of God. So when we're moving with people who are even practicing religious observances which we feel kind of oppressive, they're doing it out of faith, and therefore there is light in that. If we can absorb that light, that pleases God, I believe, more than if we absorb the light of our own spiritual path. This is why Jesus said, love your neighbors do good unto them. And this is why the great Saint Siloam of Mount Athos, he said, humility, pray for others, try to uplift the world, and bless your enemies. So this is the true spiritual motive that we should have. And we should not run away from any circumstance or any environment which we feel oppressive because we feel that people are ignorant and they don't know what we know. If they have faith in their heart, and if we can see that in their heart and absorb it by trying to move with it, even in a limited sense, the grace that we will invoke upon ourselves is beyond imagination.